Hello and welcome to the Muni Lowdown. My name is Paul Graves and I'm the managing editor for DebtWire Municipals. Today's podcast title is Public Pension Plans. I'm joined by my DebtWire colleague, Stephanie Fagnani, and Jean-Pierre Aubry, the Associate Director of State and Local Research at the Center for Retirement Research at Boston College. Stephanie, always good to have you on the podcast.
It's good to be back with you, Paul.
And Jean-Pierre, welcome back to the podcast.
It's nice to be back. Good to see you both.
I remember last time we talked, you said it was okay to call you JP. Does that still stand? I don't like to assume things here.
Yeah, I still go by JP, especially now that I have a little son that's going by Jean-Pierre.
Oh, okay. So well,
and it helps to make it clear in the household.
All right. So JP, it is. Yeah. We had you here a little over a year ago. We talked about private credit and public pension plans. But recently, in the last month, you were the lead author on a brief called The Funded Status of Public Pension Plans Keeps Improving, Albeit Modestly. But before we discuss that, what you used as part of the data that you sourced for that brief was your public plans database. And I wondered if you could talk a little bit more about that.
Sure. The PPD is a compendium of financial statistics, actuarial data, and data on the financial health of roughly 250 major state and local pension systems that the Center of Retirement Research at Boston College maintains in collaboration with a few other organizations, NASRA, the National Association of State Retirement Administrators, GFOA, and Mission Square Research. The data goes back to 2001. We update it biannually, and the most recent data we have is as of 2024 out to 2025, we estimate. And so it really provides you the most comprehensive bird's eye view breadth of pension finances in the U.S. It covers 95% of assets in public pensions in the U.S. and 95% of the members in public pensions in the U.S.
Okay, so going back to the brief that Paul just mentioned, can you tell us what some of the key takeaways from the brief were?
Yeah, what motivated the brief is every year we look at what's going on in pensions through our data. Once we collect the data and try to identify trends and themes that we see evolving. And one trend that we've been tracking over time is the funded ratio of plans in aggregate, and in particular, how those have evolved in the wake of the global financial crisis. If you recall, I'm always shocked by how long ago that was now, 2008 and 2009, when the markets crashed. In the wake of that time period, where state and local governments were hard up on revenue, struggling to fund basic services along with their pensions, they made some dramatic cuts to pension benefits for public sector workers. And they made changes to how they funded. They became more responsible funders, but also reduced the cost curve by cutting benefits along with some other changes. And so pensions are like Titanics. They are slow moving. Their adjustments are slow. The impact of their adjustments are slow. And so we knew it would take time for the changes that seemed dramatic at the time to actually have an impact on the finances of the system. And so we've been tracking that over time. What we think we're seeing right now is really the fruits of those efforts in the public pension financial space in terms of their funded ratio. What we tried to do was unpack some of those trends, those changes, and how they've evolved incrementally since the global financial crisis, and how they contribute to what we're seeing today in the funded ratio, which is essentially a slow but steady improvement in funding that we think, given these underlying trends, these fundamentals, will continue going forward.
So, JP, I noticed, you know, the headline, funded status is improving, but it ended with albeit modestly. And I'm guessing there's a reason why you thought it was important to put that modestly at the end. What's driving the expectation moving forward that you also expect any improvements to be modest?
That's a good question. We were deliberate in putting that in our title. And the reason is that even for us, there's always a tendency to kind of look at the stock market and say, well, the stock market's doing great. You know, the S&P 500 went up 20%. Why aren't funded ratios up 20%? They're in the stock market. There must be something wrong with pensions. And so what we're trying to do is kind of guard against that tendency by saying, yes, funded ratios are going to improve, but more modestly than one might expect based on that tendency to kind of look at the markets as the indicator for where pensions should be going. We go through why that is. I mean, one reason is that pensions are not 100% invested in the stock market. Like any good institutional investor, they're diversified with about half of their assets in the market, about 25% of their assets bonds, and then some the remaining portion in mostly private assets and real estate. So you wouldn't expect pension fund assets to move exactly like the S&P. And on top of that, they have cash flows. They have money in and money out, and more importantly. And that money out is significant now that the pension funds are more mature and in payout phase. Just like the country, the pension funds have aged, and now they have a large number of retirees that are drawing upon the money that they've saved for the past 30, 40 years. And so while there's high returns, there's also high outflow that limits the growth in assets that you expect to see over time. And so there are lots of other factors, also liability growth, even though that has been tempered from changes that pension funds have made to their benefits, they still grow at a modest rate. And so those are also mitigating some of the funded ratio growth one might expect if they're just looking at the stock market. So we want to control expectations, I guess, for the public going forward.
Now, in the brief, you mentioned that the increasing share of new hires is important in understanding the cost side of the equation for public pension plans. Can you explain to us why that is?
Yes, of course. As I just mentioned, one of the reasons that the improvement in the funded ratio would be more modest than one might expect is that the funded ratio is a ratio of assets over liabilities. So you have to really look at the growth of both sides, both the assets and the liabilities, to get a sense of how the overall funded ratio grows. On the liability side, pension funds have done quite a bit to reduce the growth of that liability. And one major thing that they did was they cut benefits in the wake of the global financial crisis. So that's 2008, 9, 10, 11, all the way up to around 2013. And then after that, the activity basically stopped. But those changes, those benefit cuts are primarily for new hires. In the public sector, the pension benefits for current workers are essentially protected. They're really hard to change. And politically, they're also hard to change, both legally and politically. On the other hand, new hire benefits are not protected. And politically, obviously, new hires are not hired yet. So they're not at the table to negotiate, generally, or to make a case for themselves. So cutting benefits for new hires was a easier and very common maneuver for pension funds to change the growth rate of liabilities going forward. The problem is new hires come in incrementally. It takes a while before the population of new hires replaces those of current workers. But at this point, we're pretty far along in that process. Roughly half of current workers are those that were hired after the global financial crisis and have these lower benefits. So it's starting to really play a more significant role in what you see in liability growth. I think overall, liability growth was about 8% per year in 2001, and now it's closer to 4% per year. A decent portion of that is due to the lower benefits for new hires after the global financial crisis and the fact that those new hires are now half of the workforce.
So, JP, one of the reasons I wanted you on the podcast, we wanted you on the podcast, is because of the expertise you have. And the reason I started off with the question on the public plans database is because there's a lot of institutional memory that you're working with. And in talking to you, I can get my expectations managed. It's what I can understand, because I feel like pensions are, to your point, they are a slow moving train, and it doesn't seem to get enough, I guess, what I would call education on the issue. So I got this last question for you, but it's a multi-part question. And what I'm going to use to kind of highlight it is the city of Chicago. I don't want to talk about Chicago here, but Chicago's got a couple of different pension issues that they're dealing with. And one of them right now is their public safety workforce and some changes that are being discussed, or a new bill that's been signed around increasing benefits. So my question is not about whether or not they deserve an increase in their benefits. My question is around, when you see, whether it's Chicago or other municipalities around the country, what are things you're looking for in terms of what I would call the fiscal quality of their approach? Maybe you would call it something else, but what are the things that you're looking at when you see these types of changes being made, particularly in a system that's currently underfunded?
You raise a good point. I mean, I think we've seen this activity popping up in more jurisdictions, kind of revisiting some of the benefit cuts made in the wake of the global financial crisis that I just was discussing, that helped lower the cost curve for pension plans. And as you said, I don't know Chicago's situation. I can't speak on specifically the situation, but I do know generally when these cuts were made, they were done at significant political cost and risk. And I think for that reason, you can believe that they were done purposefully and for a reason. I am concerned when some of the discussions about bringing benefits back, the way those discussions are going. I also am sensitive to the notion that this is compensation for public sector workers. And to the extent that benefit cuts were made without any offsetting changes to compensation, that the public sector may not be as competitive as it used to be. That being said, there are other ways to bolster the compensation package outside of just pensions, namely salaries, right? I think there is room for discussion about the weighting of pension versus wage and other benefits for public sector workers and what's really the appropriate mix, both fiscally and for individuals in the system. But is definitely a discussion, I think, that is starting to be had across the country, because benefit cuts in the wake of the global financial crisis, they were done primarily with a financial lens in mind and reducing overall costs for jurisdictions. And they were not really done with a total compensation, labor market competitiveness framework in mind. And that has had ramifications. And so I'm sensitive to the fact that that is an issue I've seen in the public sector. About how do you attract workers when compensation has been decimated on the pension side and not much has been done to alleviate that on the wage side. And a lot of data shows that before the global financial crisis, public sector and private sector workers were roughly at parity in terms of total compensation, wages plus pension. So if you just cut the pensions and don't do anything on wages, you're just saying I'm giving you less than you could get in the private sector for your skills. So I'm sensitive to that situation. I'm just not sure that raising the pensions is the best way to get back to parity or to make the public sector as competitive as it can be with the private sector.
I know this is going to sound like a leading question, but I have to ask you just so I can have a better understanding of when I'm looking at these different things. Is there a fiscally sound way of improving pension benefits if you're an underfunded plan, just generally?
Yeah, I mean, you're going to have to pay for it, right, either way. If you have to raise compensation, you pay for it through wages or pensions, I mean, you're paying for it. Kind of somewhat agnostic, actually. I think the challenge with pensions is that, one, the costs are deferred, so it's less transparent about what the costs actually are. It's in the political economy. Whether it gets funded later or not is always a question because you're deferring those costs. You're saying you'll pay it off over 30 years, so you're not really grappling with the issue immediately at hand. So there are lots of challenges with dealing with the uncompetitive compensation through pensions. But the question you're asking is I'm not sure if it's the right way to think about it. The question is, like, can the city afford to pay a higher compensation to their employees if that's what they need to do? That's a valid question, and I'm not sure. Whether it's pensions or wages, there's lots that needs to be thought about there in terms of what's the most efficient way, what in the political economy in terms of funding the pension, what's the most efficient way? I mean, you're going to have to pay for it either way. It doesn't come for free. If the pension fund runs out of money, the benefits are still promised. If the pension fund's underfunded, you have to pay higher contribution rates to fund those benefits. I mean, you're paying for it. And if you don't want to do it through pensions, you do it through wages, you're paying for it. There's no avoiding it if you want to increase compensation. So that's the way I think about the issue. I don't think about, is it fiscally sound to offer more pension benefits? It's more like, can you afford to provide more compensation? And think about how you want to do that.
Well, thank you for that. And this is a great segue into my last question, and you've alluded to it. Because typically there aren't any, at least on the political side, there aren't any immediate consequences to raising pension benefits, regardless of whether your plan is healthy or not healthy, funded, underfunded. But my question to you is, when does that dynamic change from going from, well, all right, things are okay now, but they're not okay anymore, and we need to do something drastic to resolve this? And just in general, are concerns about underfunded plans overblown? Like these different stories you see about a system that may be funded at 30% or something like that. Is this something that in the media folks are making too much of?
The funder ratio is a spot in time ratio. What it says is that you don't have the money aside today to pay for the benefits you've promised already. That's technically what it means. And so what you're saying is that future generations are going to have to pay for the benefits you've promised. So you're going to have to pay for them, right? So, and the funder ratio being low just means that you haven't paid for them already and that you probably won't be able to take advantage of investment returns to help defray some of those costs. I don't think it's catastrophic the way people look at lower funding. What it means is you're passing on costs to future generations. That's really where the rubber hits the road. And it's like, who is going to pay for this? is really what the fund ratio tells you. If you're underfunded, it means someone in the future is going to pay for this. If you're funded, it means people have already paid for it, ostensibly the generation that should have as those benefits were being earned. I do feel like tendency to think the concern with lower funded ratios as being catastrophic is overblown, but it doesn't mean that poorly funded plans don't indicate poor management, don't indicate future cost challenges for a government. But to some extent, those costs are going to be there no matter what. And I think for places that are really poorly funded, I mean, the rubber is hitting the road. I know we're not going to talk specifically about Chicago, but municipal bond markets know about Chicago and their pensions. And I'm interested to see how they react to something like this. It's basically saying we're going to put more costs into the future. And by doing this, more pension costs in the future. And by doing so, it's going to mean that there's less to pay debt interest or debt costs. So how do bond issuances go for City of Chicago when you do something like this? And that's where the rubber hits the road. I mean, these are all claims on future revenue. And when you're underfunded, you're saying more of these claims are on future revenue than current revenue. And that's kind of what's being indicated when you have a high unfunded liability and you increase that unfunded liability. Places like Chicago in particular, where I think markets are already very sensitive to these issues in those places.
Is there a funded ratio range that you think is, I'm going to use the word acceptable. You might use a different word, but is there something 50 to 70%, something like that, or is it not?
It really depends on what it means for the underlying jurisdiction. A really poorly funded plan that's tiny relative to the government's finances, it doesn't mean much. It's really when you think about the risk of the funded ratio, it's really what the costs does that imply for the government? And that's, I think, the best way to think about it. So if you're a really small plan, few members relative to the overall city's finances, then being poorly funded won't matter that much. And the city can just deal with it. Having volatile costs won't matter that much. But if you're a larger system and those costs are pretty large relative to revenue and other expenses, then being underfunded really does matter, right? The change in those costs, even a small percentage change, could really matter to the jurisdiction. So the best way to think about it actually is to look at how the unfunded liability translates into costs for the jurisdiction to think about that.
So Stephanie, this is why, once again, it is always important to surround yourself with smart people so that you can get the information that you need. JP, thank you for coming on the podcast. Stephanie, as always, thank you for participating. And to our audience, I hope you found this podcast to be informative. Please support us by liking, sharing, commenting, and subscribing on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Until the next time, thanks for joining us on the Muni Lowdown.